Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I checked with them just before the show.
You called over there and listened to the answering machine?
Yes, I did.
Voice was still on it?
Yep.
Good deal.
Yep. So they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they're everything John Deere, tractors, ag, turf. Go by and see them. And you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. That's P-A-P-E, by the way.
If you're watching us, I always have my Pape mug.
Yes.
Because, you know, I got a million of these things, but this one actually keeps coffee hot for like a million years.
Keeps you moving. That's their slogan. Yeah.
That has sort of a bizarre intestinal overtone there. I'm thinking that's not where we want to go.
Okay, leave it to you.
Dr. Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. I forgot to say it last time, but Sunday the 13th of September 2020, in case we replay this and people are wondering what we're talking about and why we're talking about that. So, we don't have to do that. Robert plugs that in.
Oh, he does?
Bill's trying to give me smoke signals, but I can't answer him in smoke signals. So, thanks a lot for putting up with half that conversation. Our guest this hour, who is Mr. Save the Day. That's actually not his real name. His real name is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, but he is such a good friend of ours. We can just, like, shoot him an email really late at night and say, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Just realized we had an hour, and nobody cares what we think. We pride ourselves on bringing in experts who know things so that you don't have to, well, you might learn what we think, but you don't have to believe us. You can believe the experts. And he has a terrific article in The American Thinker, and I've attached it for you today at wethepeopleradio.us. It's right there at the bottom of the page for September 13th, 2020 there. And in The American Thinker, it's called The Enemy Within Our Nuclear Weapon Labs. And so I asked him, I said, what should we call the show today? And he said, Losing World War III at Home. So not to put too fine a point on it, but I think this is going to be an interesting program. Dr. Pry, you've got quite the background. We've talked to you about electromagnetic pulse. You've written a terrific book called The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMPs Commission War to Save America, 2001 to 2020, and they're still working on it. Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America's to protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe and Electric Armageddon and bunches of really great stuff. I've got all his books linked up there. Super well-researched and very interesting. He's got multiple PhDs in history and archaeology, and I worked for the CIA and all sorts of good stuff. We're not supposed to say that out loud.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy with a good sense of humor and lots of great information. So I guess on that auspicious note, take it away from over in Virginia land. Far from the smoke. Good for you. 3,000 miles away. Hopefully we're not blacking out your skies, too.
Well, I have to apologize. I thought I had sent you my article titled Losing World War III at Home.
Oh, I'll find it.
That was published in the Washington Times shortly after the other article that you cited, but we can talk about them both.
Well, you know what I'll do? I'll post them both.
Because they're both related to possibly losing World War III at home.
Perfect.
Since we depend upon our nuclear weapons labs, Los Alamos, Livermore, and Sandia. Those are our nuclear weapon laboratories. You know, for no longer designing, because we haven't designed a new nuclear weapon in decades, but for maintaining the old nuclear weapons that were designed by geniuses many decades ago, most of whom are now either dead or retired, and it's my privilege to know the few who are still alive, but they are retired, and so we've got these whiz kids who have never designed a nuclear weapon, but they know how to do computer modeling, and so they're trying to keep our nuclear weapons patched together and still operating, even though they weren't designed to last this long. Most of them were only designed to have service lives of about a decade, maybe a little longer than that. But they've been in service now for 5-6 times as long as they were originally designed. And so we keep patching them together, and the whiz kids keep telling us with their computer modeling, they tell Congress every year that, these nuclear weapons will still work. But most of the experts, especially those designers who made them and designed them from back in those days, say, well, you know, as time goes on, we can't have that confidence anymore, because we're not testing these things anymore to see if they actually will work. So we have problems enough just with the physics and technology of nuclear weapons. Got our hands full with that problem. And you'd think the last neat thing we would need to do is subject our scientists and engineers and technicians at the nuclear weapons laboratories with something like critical race theory, which is completely irrelevant to their jobs.
And everything else.
Yeah, but greatly increases the chance, if you manage to convince these guys, these scientists, that America is a racist, institutionally racist, evil nation that is unredeemable because of its long racist history, and that you, nuclear weapons labs technicians, who tend to be mostly white males, are also evil racists. And if you manage to convince, well, even one of these people that that's true, it could have catastrophic consequences for our national security, because they might... We've already had problems with the nuclear weapon labs leaking design information. The Wenho Lee affair, for example, that happened during the Clinton administration. You know, when we had a scientist, ethnically Chinese scientist, who ended up transferring nuclear weapons design information to China. And he was never punished for that, because the Clinton administration covered it up, and instead, as the Democrats are wont to do, they ended up destroying the life of a good friend of mine, a gentleman named Notre Trulock, who had been the director of foreign intelligence at the Department of Energy, and he uncovered the Wenho Lee spy case and testified before Congress, before the House Armed Services Committee. I actually ran that hearing, and the Clinton administration orchestrated a media effort to portray Notra as a racist. He was denounced as a racist in the editorial pages of the New York Times, and he was driven out of the national security community. One of my best and brightest, they really broke him. And, I think he's still alive, but he's hiding out someplace not doing national security work anymore. And Wenho Lee got off scot-free. And these politically incorrect days with the weapons labs, you know, to now be teaching critical race theory, it increases many-fold possibility of future acts of treason. And if Biden gets elected president, you can be sure it'll be covered up, because Biden is very friendly toward China. So we know about this, about the fact that the critical race theory is being shoved down the throats of Sandia Lab, the 16,000 lab technicians in Sandia, because a brave electrical engineer who works there, a guy named Casey Peterson, spilled the beans on it and put out a two-hour YouTube video. I don't know if it's been canceled yet. I expect it will be at some point. It might still be up, where he basically exposes denounces critical race theory, and logically, like an engineer, goes through it and shows how it's all based on lies, and it's basically anti-American propaganda. And a couple people in the media, Tyler Durden and Chris Rufo, and Tucker Carlson, to Tucker's credit, they're about the only ones who have been talking about this. But fortunately, you know, it got President Trump's attention. And I think it was the Friday before Labor Day weekend, so not long ago, President Trump put out a memo to the Office of Management Budget directing that no federal monies shall be spent to brainwash federal employees on critical race theory anymore in the future. And because it is an anti-American, it is itself a racist, anti-American propaganda. you know, these theories. And that is absolutely true.
Imagine that. And,
right.
And oh, and the taxpayers get to pay for it. So whether you agree or you disagree, you got to foot the bill. We have to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. And awaken the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise.
Yeah, and that hardly ever happens.
Yeah,
the
late, great John Prine.
All right, Dr. Prine. Sorry to cut you off. We have to do that three times an hour, which is just brutal.
Sure. Well, another threat from brainwashing people into critical race theory, in addition to the possibility of disclosing nuclear secrets, is the fact that these laboratories, as I said before, are responsible for maintaining the nuclear deterrent, the nuclear warheads themselves. And, you know, I could easily see, you know, people being pushed over the edge by this training to, you know, to sabotage the weapons, you know, to do it wrong. Let's not forget that these people, the people that are staffing our laboratories now, you know, they're coming out of our modern university system where critical race theory is taught. Fortunately, I think our engineering and physics departments, you know, are not yet politicized. But anybody who gets a degree in those areas is also forced to take degrees, courses in the humanities, where they will be exposed to courses in social science or literature. And this is where the left lives in our universities. Political science, all those departments, you know, are dominated by the left. And so they may well already come out of our university system, almost inevitably, with a strong left-wing bias. That's where the violence in our streets is coming from. You know, the ideology of Black Lives Matters and Antifa, these spoiled university brats that are largely comprising the brown shirts, you know, who are burning down buildings and attacking the police.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, ironically, are you know, white kids from wealthy families like that that have been brainwashed through these university systems and have been inculcated with this Marxist, racist vision of what America is. And so, you know, these people, we have tended to think of our nuclear weapons labs as still staffed with guys like Edward Teller and Lowell Wood and John Foster, you know, the people who invented the atomic bombs and the H-bombs, and that generation is gone. You know, this new generation. In fact, in the article I mentioned a former high-ranking scientist and official who worked at Scindia National Labs, and he shared with me some observations that I put forward in the article. That the new generation, you know, is not committed to U.S. national security and to the United States as the older generation were. And they were not ideologically reliable, you know, to build new nuclear weapons. And so they're perfectly happy to basically go along with the Clinton administration's stockpile stewardship program, where they don't have to work on designing new nuclear weapons, and all they have to do is just keep patching up the old ones, because they would like to do things other than work on nuclear weapons. In fact, it's a misnomer to call the nuclear weapon labs anymore, since they haven't designed nuclear weapons, they haven't tested them, and nuclear weapons technology is not the chief thing they do anymore. You know, maybe one-third of their work is focused on nuclear weapons. Two-thirds is on things like climate change and, you know, new energy systems and all kinds of other science that is worthy, but it's not related to nuclear weapons. And one of the confidences that, not confidence, but one of the observations that was made by this scientist also is he had direct experience. He knew Edward Teller before he died. Teller is the inventor of the hydrogen bomb. He was one of our greatest nuclear weapons scientists. But Teller had a conversation with a director of one of the nuclear weapon labs at which my colleague was present and said, you know, you guys should focus. Doing nuclear weapons is hard enough. I mean, that's the advanced, most cutting-edge, hardest kind of scientific technology that we have, that we know of. And your whole focus should be on that. I wish you would get away from being multi-purpose and looking to do things other than nuclear weapons. If you focused on nuclear weapons, you know, we could reduce the size and the budget of these nuclear weapon labs to a third. To a third. That would only have to be a third the size they are now, and that only cost a third as much, and we'd do a much better job at maintaining the nuclear weapons and maintaining our nuclear deterrent, which is supposed to be your main mission, your only mission, really. That's why they were founded, and it was supposed to originally be their only mission. And the lab directors rejected Teller's sage advice. You know, like any bureaucracy, they're more focused on just garnering power and money for their institutions and bringing in more people, regardless of the consequences for our nuclear deterrent. So that's one way in which we can lose World War III at home, because the foundation of our national security, the one weapon that matters the most, is the nuclear weapons. You know, people, Americans, think of them as unusable, but the Chinese and the Russians and the North Koreans and the Iranians, they don't think of them as unusable. They have plans to use them. The reason they don't is, so far, they've been deterred by our ever-weakening nuclear deterrent. And we're really playing with fire to not maintain. We should have learned from the Cold War, you know, that the reason we managed to win the Cold War, and we won it without there being a nuclear World War III, is because we wouldn't let the Soviet Union get any advantage in numbers or technology over the United States. We were careful to maintain parity with them, to maintain the nuclear balance. And we're letting the nuclear balance get way out of whack in the post-Cold War, way out of whack. You know, the Democrats, if they have their way, if we end up with a Biden administration, they want to shift to a minimum deterrent strategy where we get rid of our ICBM and our bomber legs and cut the ballistic missile submarine fleet by more than half. Our whole deterrent would then count on just six ballistic missile submarines, you know, which are not necessarily invulnerable. You know, people are constantly asserting that the submarine boats are invulnerable because they can't be located. Well, we live in a new technological time where the seas are transparent. In fact, the Russians even are deploying, I've talked before on your show about the Poseidon, automated torpedo. It's a robot submarine that's designed to be unmanned and to be, it's nuclear powered, so it can be out at sea basically for years if need be. And it'll carry possibly up to a 100 megaton warhead, largest nuclear weapon ever deployed by anyone. I think that the purpose of Poseidon is to go after our ballistic missile submarines. I think the Russians are hoping that we'll get rid of the ICBMs and bombers and do what the Democrats are suggesting, and we'll only have a ballistic missile submarine fleet. You know, these Poseidons could follow our ballistic missile subs around, and when it comes time for war, detonate themselves. You know, a 100-megaton warhead would have a lethal radius against a submarine of well over 100 kilometers.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to be right on top of it.
No, it could be more than 100 kilometers away, you know, and still destroy the submarine. So that's one way you can lose World War III at home, by our people failing to maintain that nuclear deterrent. But there's another way of losing World War III at home, a second way, and that is simply by adopting the ideology of our adversaries, because that's what critical race theory is. You know, this view of the United States that was propounded by critical race theory is exactly the propaganda that Russia and China and North Korea and Iran are portraying the United States as a institutionally racist, corrupt, materialist, unredeemable society.
For the people who are being, like, they're hearing this critical race theory thing thrown around. We only have 2 minutes to the break, so you might want to do it afterward. But maybe you could give people, like, the elevator speech for critical race theory. Like, what exactly is it that they're teaching? Because not everyone is on the computer, and, you know, obviously the mainstream media isn't covering that at all. And people who live outside the country who are listening are going, now what are these crazy people doing? So maybe you could define that a little tighter so that folks know why that it's bad.
Okay, sure. I think it would be best left till after the break.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's find out. Can we do that early? Yeah, we'll take our break here just a teensy bit early, and then when we come back, we'll delve into that, because I don't want anybody to miss why this is important, and that happens a lot. If you don't know what's scary about it and dangerous, it's kind of hard to oppose. We'll be right back.
Never owe another man. Watch where you spit on a windy day. Don't use words you don't understand. Find the Lord before you need Him. And never lose your pride. Don't ever sell your saddle, 'cause life's a long, long ride. Don't ever sell your saddle, 'cause life's a long, long ride.
Justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
Let the gun smoke settle, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I wonder if they ever switch it up. Give beer to the men and whiskey to the horses.
Probably not.
Probably make them run faster.
Makes it tough for a quick getaway.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You kind of wander in a circle.
Yeah.
Kind of on a country theme this hour a little bit. So
critical race theory.
Yeah.
Okay. The elevator speech on critical race theory.
All right, we can go longer. We've got 15 minutes now until the next break. So,
first, you know, to understand it and its importance, I think we need to understand what our civilization is, our Judeo-Christian, constitutionally-based civilization, believes that government, public policy, should be based on the idea of the sovereignty of the individual, that we are all individuals, that God made us individuals, and we have equal worth. We don't all have equal capabilities, but we all have equal worth by God or nature or both, and that the good society is structured on that recognition that we all need to be treated as individuals, regardless of our race, creed, color, that we all have equality under the law and should be treated as such and have equal opportunities under the law to do as well as we can given the gifts that God or nature has given us. That's what our society is about. Now, critical race theory is basically a supercharged version of the Marxist-Leninist class struggle. It's the ultimate in identity politics. And it says, you know, that there is no such thing as an individual. Individualism doesn't count for anything. It's not real. It's an illusion. And that what we exist as is class, race, gender. You know, this theory, part of the theory is intersectionality. Some of these people, you know, you can be a member of a particular class, working class, a person of a particular race, and have a certain gender preference, And this defines your group, your identity, in terms of where you're located, on this spectrum. And it basically is a racist, classist, sexist view of the world. They think that they're liberating the oppressed classes, but they basically have a structure of goodness, as it were, really defined in terms of who are the most oppressed and who are the least oppressed, or even the oppressor classes. So at the top of the pyramid are those who are most oppressed, who are, you know, people who are, for example, you know, not heterosexual, one of the other 26 genders, so if you're lesbian, okay, working class person, you're at the top of the heap, all right? And if you're a white male heterosexual Christian, then you're at the bottom of the heap. You're one of the oppressor class. And you can't even raise yourself out of that class by being by becoming enlightened, by taking the critical race theory course. They will tell you, even though you've taken this course, you know, it doesn't make you a better person, because you are, it's hardwired into you by your culture and your upbringing and the very fact that you're a white male Christian. You know, these oppressive inclinations, the patriarchal capitalist,
You might want to succeed too, and that'd be bad. That's always bad. You know, if you were going to make this into a game, it would be like grievance bingo, and your prize is unhappiness. It's like,
well, yeah, this sounds so crazy to people that it's hard to believe that it's taken seriously, but it is taken seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Not only in the universities, but the 1619 Project is about to introduce K through 12 public school children to this concept, to this critical race theory, and there's a Black History Museum in Washington D.C. That has espoused this and put out things like some of the characteristics, the bad characteristics that are out there. That white people have are a belief in the nuclear family, patriotism, hard work, a hard work ethic. These things are derided as examples of not objective conditions for achieving happiness for anybody, but as sort of a sick focus of the dominant culture, okay, that is not necessarily the road to happiness, you know, and it's built on, really, the success of our society is not built on these characteristics, but on the oppressive of other races and sexes and over the course of history. And one would think that would be insulting normal people of color or people who have different genders to say, hey, if you believe in the nuclear family and hard work, okay, that you don't have these characteristics. In effect, it's implying that these other races don't have these characteristics. But you know, obviously, you know, from a historian's point of view, you know, if you go to Confucius, these same virtues, these are regarded as virtues in every society. In every society, you know, not just in Western civilization, the idea of fidelity to the nuclear family and respecting your parents and transmitting values from one generation to another and hard work and trying to apply rationality to your problems. In every society, this is and have been pointed to as the pathway to happiness and success in life. You know, it's not unique to our own civilization. The fundamentals of critical race theory are fundamentally untrue, but we are adopting it. We are adopting it. Our university kids have been, so many of them, and you can see them on the streets fighting because of this on Antifa. And I say we can lose World War III at home, even without a war. You know, because if we adopt this ideology and we don't fight back and against this thing, and it takes over the minds of our young and our next generation, then we will have lost the war. We will have lost the values, the civilizational values, that have made America what it is for 200 years, the greatest, freest, most colorblind civilization that has ever existed in history, the most benign civilization that has ever existed in history. And we will become, in effect, a totalitarian state, you know, based on this perverted version of Marxism-Leninism that is even worse than what the Soviet Union embraced, because it's got these other elements in it. In addition to the class war, there's a race war and a sex war, a gender war, I should say, you know, going on that are also layered upon it. So that is, in a nutshell, is critical race theory and why it's bad and why the idea is a great danger to our civilization. You know, it contradicts the fundamentals of what our civilization is based on, Judeo-Christian civilization, and a constitutional republic is based on, you know, which is a belief that the individual person, you know, is the building block, you know, for all the rest of your society, and that we are individuals. We are not prisoners of the class or race or sex that we belong to, you know, and we need to be treated as individuals under the law and
valued for our abilities and merits.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, not hired for a job because you were the right shape or size or color or whatever. But
with that being said, I guess I'm still a little confused as to why they feel that is necessary in a nuclear weapons facility.
Bill, are you using logic again?
Well, maybe it's because one of the directors of the nuclear labs, her name is in the article, escapes me at the moment, but there were four people who were identified in the top leadership, including the Sandia National Lab director, who shoved this down their throats. But his number two is a woman who happens to also be affiliated with the University of California and the Russian Academy of Sciences. According to her own SNL biography, you know, and I would like the FBI to investigate that connection with the Russian Academy of Sciences. You know, why do we have a top director at Sandia National Labs also being a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences?
Russian Academy of Sciences would have no connection to the Russian government.
The only thing that's being affected is Putin is running the White House.
Right.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
You know, I forgot.
Exactly.
Okay, he's running the national labs, but, you know, don't look over there.
No, it makes no sense at all. But these people are Obama holdovers, all of them. They're just another example of the swamp that President Trump promised to drain. And I hope if he gets reelected that he will finally start draining the swamp. And
I think he will.
With the nuclear weapon labs. Well, there's so many places he should.
I was going to say, can you imagine the sucking sound if he really did pull the plug on the bathtub? I mean, it would just be, be deafening. There's just so many places. Every time we talk to somebody on this program, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we've got to get rid of all those people. Oh, we've got to get rid of those people.
Oh, there would be tears, I guarantee you.
That's true. liberal tears.
Well, we don't necessarily have to replace a lot of these people. Government has gotten so big and fat. Maybe we should do what Dr. Teller had recommended and chop out two-thirds of the people at the nuclear weapons labs, the two-thirds who are not working on nuclear weapons, and just get rid of them.
Yeah,
nice.
And
Siberia. Oh, my gosh, the Russians might have something for us after all.
You know, right. They're so talented and brilliant. Surely they can make a living working on climate change
technology.
Yes.
You know, in the private sector.
They need to be freed to
the origins
to
of naval
their potential.
Exactly. Let them live up. Let them demonstrate their potential. There as individuals.
Yeah.
The other article I had written that had the title, Losing World War III at Home, was basically making the point that foreign adversaries must be looking at this at 100 days of violence and counting, going on in our cities.
Hey, that's got to look like a green light.
Oh, they got to be. They got to be taking note of what's happening in our big cities and calculating their next move.
Thinking, gee, these people, we could take them over, and they wouldn't even know we were here. Yeah. They're so busy running around with their hair on fire.
Note not just of what's happening in our big cities, but of the impotence of the government.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's that.
Absolutely.
This is the second precedent we have, because in the 60s, of course, we had a similar thing happen, where for years the counterculture movement and black radicalism and anti-Vietnam War activists, you know, spun off a lot of terrorist organizations, so that we had burning and looting and rioting on a scale comparable today. But we also, in the course of those years, had 4,000 bombings happen in the United States. Now, the 4,000 bombings haven't happened in this country yet the second time, but give it time. The revolution is young. It's only about 100 days old, and this thing could go on for years and probably
And they're being by not prosecuting them and by not cracking down on this stuff, they're basically being green-lighted. I mean, you're not required to peacefully protest. If you want to go burn stuff down, it's treated like peaceful protest.
Because you might really need some of that stuff.
That's right.
If you do,
can't prosecute you then.
Can't prosecute you. So
we'll be right back. We've got to take our last break during this program. I tell you what, this hour goes fast. I hate having people only on for an hour. It's awful. Not enough time. So you are listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, or the devil even knows you're there.
Well, I know she's not perfect, and that we agree. I think that you'll come to find there's no other place like the U.S. of A. If you can't see that sun, you're blind. Don't be surprised if I get fighting mad. The least we can do is to stand for the men who have died and laid down their lives for people they don't even know. The moms and the dads and all of the kids whose loved ones will never come home. So when that anthem is played and Old Glory is waiting, I cover my heart with my hand. That's where I stand.
That's a guy named Creed Fisher, if you've never heard him. I stumbled across him in the YouTube land while I was looking for songs, and he's got some really good stuff out there. Seems fitting for all of our types of shows.
Yeah.
So Dr. Pry, in the final, like, nine-ish minutes... What else? I posted both articles, by the way.
Thank you.
I just fumbled the ball on that other one, but they're both on there, and they were both excellent.
Well, thank you. Yeah, in a nutshell, on that second article on losing World War III at home, the idea is that, you know, our adversaries, I'm sure, are planning what are called gray zone wars. You know, the introduction of special forces into our country before a big war breaks out overseas, so that they could use information warfare to masquerade as Black Lives Matter or Antifa, you know, before the big war begins overseas, to attack our military bases, to attack ballistic missile submarines, bombers, tankers, take out as much stuff as they could. Maybe black out the electric grid. That'd be well within their capabilities. 99% of the electricity for our military bases depends on the electric grid, so that they're positioned to basically win World War III here at home in the United States through special forces operations, before they launch the big invasion of Taiwan or attacking South Korea or taking over NATO Europe, or attacking Israel. The violence in our streets happens to coincide with a technological revolution in special forces weapons that's happening in Russia and China and elsewhere. You know, for example, the Chinese developed, as have the Russians and the Iranians, specialized drones, unmanned aerial vehicles that can be operated by one person, that can carry high explosive missiles. You know, the Iranians demonstrated this capability, crossing hundreds of kilometers to attack the Saudi oil refineries very accurately with unmanned drones. You know, as a free and open society, this kind of technology could be stockpiled. Not all of it is high-tech technology either. The Russians and Chinese and even the North Koreans have got super sniper rifles that can fire an armor-piercing round 3 kilometers, for example.
Wow.
You know, if you put one hole in a ballistic missile submarine in the pressure hull, that thing is neutralized, you know. And our military bases, our bombers, our tankers, even our ICBM fields, you know, they're designed, the security for these things is really bad. You know, they were designed in the 1950s Ozzie and Harriet type America, when Antifa and Spetsnaz and GRU Special Forces were unthinkable to us. And we haven't really improved the security in all that time. As a free and open society, as I said, you could stockpile this stuff. Another example of one of these Special Forces super weapons is, you know, the Russians have developed a grenade launcher, a man-operated, you know, one-man shoulder-fired grenade launcher that fires a thermobaric grenade or a little warhead that has the explosive equivalent of a 155-millimeter artillery shell, you know, which is a huge thing. You can blow up a whole apartment building with that, you know, or take out a huge chunk of the Pentagon or completely destroy the White House with just one of these. So a lone gunman is basically a walking artillery battery. You know, there are drones that have radio frequency warheads that can follow the power lines and black out the country. You know, these are, you know, not things that have to be launched by a big nation. You know, a couple of individuals could, within our own borders, could do this. There are all of these things are available to North Korea and Iran. If they haven't invented their own, they can get them from their client states, Russia and China. And as I may have noted already, you know, one of the disadvantages we have as a free and open society when it comes to these military contests is that it's easy to smuggle this stuff into our borders. You know, they could stockpile up whatever they needed, and they probably have already, years in advance. You know, we know that during the Cold War, the USSR planned for something like this, even planned to get nuclear suitcases into the United States for Spetsnaz and GRU forces so they could do things like vaporize the White House and vaporize the Pentagon just before a nuclear first strike to eliminate our nuclear retaliatory capabilities. Well, you can do a lot more these days with non-nuclear weapons, these special forces super weapons. And I'm sure the Napoleons in all of our adversary countries, looking at the violence that's going on our street, and especially the inability of the government to cope with it, you know, are just salivating at implementing these kinds of operations to at least position themselves so that when they want to launch their aggressive war against us, or if they feel they need to defend themselves against us at some point, you know, they would unleash this war first, and we wouldn't even know it's a war. We wouldn't know necessarily that we were that this was a war coming at us from a hostile foreign government, because they could cover it up, as I said, through clever information warfare campaigns to try to convince us that we face an existential threat from our own domestic terrorists. And then, when they've achieved the damage they want to achieve, then China can invade Taiwan, North Korea could invade South Korea, Russia could roll over NATO Europe, and Iran could attack Israel, and we wouldn't be there. We wouldn't be able to be there. Even if these attacks were only partially successful or even unsuccessful, it might deter us from going to the defense of our allies, because you know, we would want to make sure that that the domestic threat was solved completely before going and risking our troops in an overseas engagement, you know, when we might suddenly get into a blackout, for example. And and suffer some crippling blow, you know, going into battle under these circumstances would be a lot like going into a war with one broken arm and a boot off, you know, while you're being harassed at home. And that's just one of the prices we have to pay for being a free society. I think what we need to do, I make a recommendation in the article, you know, we can't afford to become a surveillance state like China and still be a free society. You know, these tyrannies have little tolerance for dissent, let alone violence. Most people aren't aware of it, but, you know, you look at the Tiananmen Square uprising, you know, when people were peacefully demonstrating. These were peaceful protesters in China, you know, showing the Statue of Liberty. 10,000 to 30,000 of those people were massacred by the Chinese. That never really made the headlines here in the United States. You know, North Korea has got 120,000 people in concentration camps for suspected disloyalty to the regime. They've killed 400,000 people just for suspected disloyalty to the regime. So they don't tolerate this sort of thing, and they probably can hardly believe their eyes, you know, that America is and has to tolerate these things because of the, well, although we don't have to tolerate the violence and shouldn't be doing that, but at minimum, what we need to do is have better base security for our military bases. We're no longer in the Aussie and Harriet America of the 1950s. We need to do things like we ought to have hardened shelters for our submarines so they're not just sitting there out in open berths where a sniper can use a bullet to basically immobilize them and make them useless for war. We ought to, you know, we shared with Israel. I mean, Israel has that Iron Dome defense, which can be used against not just ballistic missiles, but also drones, all kinds of airborne threats. You know, we ought to have an Iron Dome defense for our ICBM bases and for our military bases. I didn't mention the shoulder-fired SAMs. That could be a hugely crippling threat. There's 50,000 of them that have been proliferated over the world. You know, the bad guys could shoot down bombers and tankers and with those. And you could take down an ICBM in its boost phase with a shoulder-fired SAM or even with a hunting rifle. You know, so if we were to put up defenses like this for our at least for our nuclear deterrent and for our vital conventional forces, it would greatly mitigate this vulnerability that we have to have as a free and open society.
Well, I hope people will go and read both of those articles, and if you don't want to go find them anywhere else, you can find them on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. The author is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He has been with us for the past hour, and I guarantee you, you'll want to listen to other shows he's done. You go to the website, you will see them. Thank you, Dr. Pry. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
We could. Oh, no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.